It's Nick Kaufman, here for Calvin Klein. Another word for sexy? Confident. Vulnerable. Me and these Calvins? Calvins are nothing. Find your sexy.
Hey Mets fans, welcome back to Amazing Avenue Audio, the show. My name is Brian. Chris is not here this week. He is still on vacation, and so we are having a special guest, Battery Powers Daniel Hutchinson Couch, who will be joining us to talk about the Mets-Braves series that begins tomorrow. But first, late on Thursday evening, Joel Sherman tweeted out that the Mets were calling up top prospect Francisco Alvarez to join the team in Atlanta. Now, Alvarez is being called up to be the right-handed piece of the DH platoon for the end of the season and hopefully to tune him up for the playoffs. Now, this is a little bit unusual as he is making his major league debut just 6 games before the end of the regular season, but the right-handed piece of the Mets DH platoon has been pretty unremarkable so far this season with Darren Ruff and Mark Vientos currently holding down that role and neither one exactly being effective in any way over the long haul. And so this is a risk, but it's a calculated one. Alvarez has hit lefties incredibly well this season, as well as, you know, a good test for the future. It's a big test for somebody, and so I think that there's a chance this blows up in their face if he is not ready for the challenge. But there's only one way to find out, and that is to give him some time to play. So that adds another layer of excitement for what is going to be a very exciting series. And so without further ado, Daniel and I are going to get into that series preview right now. All right, I am joined on the line tonight by Daniel Hutchinson Couch from Battery Power, the SB Nation Atlanta Braves site. Now, forgive the ignorance of Mets fans. Why is it called Battery Power?
Well, the new stadium, previously known as SunTrust Park, but now known as Truist Park, we have a large facility next to the stadium called the Battery, which is obviously a reference to the whole, you know, pitching, catching duo, but also, you know, baseball bats. But yeah, they have a lot of cool restaurants and just it's a really great vibe in that northern Atlanta area.
Okay, yeah, I have not been out to the new park yet. I was at Turner Field a number of years ago, but I have not been to the new ballpark yet. One of these days, I will make it down. I was in Atlanta in June and tried to get out of a work obligation to go to a game, and I could not make that work, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's a lot that could be discussed regarding the Battery, and just that's sort of a financial model that a lot of other teams have looked at and are, you know, looking to move towards sort of as they make their own, you know, real estate and stadium renovations.
Yes, yeah. So anyway, thank you for coming on the show. You know, this is going to be something I think unusual for both Mets fans and Braves fans, which is hopefully civil discourse between a representative from each team about baseball. But, you know, it's been an interesting year so far.
Yeah, it has. You know, the Braves obviously went on a pretty rough start, and the Mets started out really nicely, and that's where you got the whole, you know, the NL East is over thing, and then the Braves played like ungodly good for the next 3 months, and so
yes,
now here we are.
Yeah, and you know, it's pretty incredible because this is like, I guess it was last season when the Dodgers and the Giants each had like 1 in 105, 1 in 106 wins. Like, it's a very similar situation in the NL East this year, where any other year one of these teams would clearly be in first place and it wouldn't be a competition. But here we are on the eve of the final weekend of the season with one game separating the Mets and the Braves. So before we start, just sort of give your overall just tenor of the last, you know, week to 10 days. How is the team looking? Are there any injuries that we should be aware of? Anyone really hot or really cold? Just sort of give us the lay of the land for the Braves.
Yeah, so obviously the biggest injury is just Spencer Strider, you know, rookie of the year candidate. He's basically been baby DeGrom this season. And I mean, he's been absurd, and that really hurts because it looked like he might be, you know, lined up to pitch this series, and he's been arguably Atlanta's best pitcher this season, but he has a oblique injury, and that now casts doubt on whether he's even going to be available early in the postseason. So that's a big bummer. But as far as big performers, I mean, Michael Harris has been a godsend as a rookie this year. He's also the other rookie of the year candidate from Atlanta. And Ronald Acuna has really been starting to look like himself again, which is really nice because, you know, he came back from the ACL and he hadn't quite looked like his usual, you know, top five player in the world level, but he has found his power stroke in the last week or two, which is what he'd really been missing. And so that's been really promising. And Matt Olson, who had been slumping for the last good bit, has also been picking it up in the last week or so. So that's what you've sort of seen in the last few weeks.
Yeah. On the Mets side of that, you know, DeGrom had a rough start over the weekend, but we'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. And the Mets are still without Starling Marte, who has been on the IL with a broken finger. He is due back at some point soon, but there is not sort of a clear date for that yet. And the Mets played three lefties in a row this weekend, or faced three lefties in a row, rather, and really missed Marte's bat. So that is still – that is their only offensive piece right now that is dealing with an active injury. Brandon Nimmo had a tight quad over the weekend, but – has seemingly turned a corner on that. And, you know, this is the time of year, a lot of players are playing slightly banged up, but, you know, everyone is, both teams are relatively at full strength minus Marte and baby DeGrom, as you called him. DeGrom never had a mustache that good. So that's, I will put him.
He had the flow though.
He did have the flow. Yes. So, you know, so I guess we could maybe trade those or say that those are, you know, equally cool, you know, hair features for the two players.
Yeah. And I should say, you know, future Atlanta Brave Jacob DeGrom.
No, I don't think so. We got Steve Cohen money now. You know that might have been the case when the Wilpons were there, but you get a billionaire owner. I don't think that's going to happen. But I know Braves fans would love that.
Buster Olney has been pushing that narrative, though. I don't know.
Buster Olney also said he was going to sell his family farm. Didn't come to the Mets? It was somebody. Two off seasons ago, he said he would sell his family farm if someone. I think it was Spencer. I think it was George Spencer wasn't a Met. And when I interviewed Olney, I actually before the interview, I said, "Can I bust your balls about this?" And he said, "Oh, sure, go right ahead." So you know, I busted him a little bit for that. But yeah, no, I mean. What team wouldn't want DeGrom right now? You know.
Yeah, probably the Pittsburgh Pirates, but you know.
maybe the Pirates, yeah. But you know, it's going to be a really fun matchup of pitchers this weekend, and I want to actually start with the pitchers. I want to start with Sunday's matchup because Sunday night's game is the national game on ESPN, and the Mets actually switched their rotation around this week. They were supposed to have Chris Bassitt starting Friday night, but that has been changed. Now Chris Bassitt is starting on Sunday night against Charlie Morton. Morton is obviously a veteran, somebody who has been doing this a very long time. How do you feel about Morton this season?
You know, it's been kind of weird because you've seen games where he's looked like your you know, Charlie Morton that we've grown to expect over the last, you know, 3 to 5 years. But over the whole season, he has struggled a bit. And it's been a weird struggle because the strikeouts have been there, but his home run rate has almost doubled since last season. And it's by far the highest that he's had since 2010. When he was not at all the same pitcher.
No, he wasn't capital C, capital M Charlie Morton in 2010.
Yeah, and you know, he has this reputation as a big game pitcher, and you know, that's shown up in the playoffs recently and you know, whatnot. But it's scary when he's given up as many home runs as he is, because you see some games where he has, you know, 11 strikeouts over 7 innings and of, you know, no runs allowed. But then you have some other games where it's 4 innings and he's given up 4 home runs. And so that matchup is – that could be the pivot of the series.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that is certainly the least marquee of the starts in terms of pitcher matchups. But Bassitt and Morton aren't anything to sneeze at. Both are having good years. Both are veteran sort of cagey pitchers. That should be a fun matchup. Moving backwards a day, Saturday we have Max Scherzer for the Mets, Kyle Wright for the Braves. You know, Scherzer is – this will be his third start off the IL. In his first start, he went 6 perfect innings. In his second start, he looked, you know, dominant. You know, it really is an ace one and ace 1A situation for the Mets right now. But Kyle Wright is having a pretty phenomenal season of his own. He has 20 wins, an ERA just over 3. Would you say that Wright is, how do you sort of lay out the Braves pitching staff? Who is number one in your eyes?
So I think if you ask any Braves fan who they expect to be the number one starter going into the postseason, it's going to be Max Fried, even with a healthy Strider. I think Strider's been the best pitcher for the Braves this season, and that's not really that much of a controversial statement, given that he has more F4 than Max Fried, despite, you know, starting the first month of the season out of the bullpen.
Right.
But Max Fried's, you know, been established for years, and so he's going to be that guy who the Braves are going to rely on as the number one starter. Kyle Wright's probably in the three spot right there. You know, he does have the fantastic 3.18 ERA, but that's a little bit smoke and mirrors if you look at his xERA and FIP, although xFIP likes it a little bit more. But still, you know, he gets some of the Cy Young discussion among more of the old school writers and journalists because the ERA and the wins numbers. Yeah. But as far as what I would actually project him to be moving forward, or even just if you were to, you know, repeat the season 100 times, it wouldn't be as good as you've gotten this season from him. But that being said, it's still been a godsend for the Braves, because before this season, he was nothing after being drafted really high, getting a massive draft bonus, and he had basically done nothing aside from a few spot starts at the big league level to really justify that. But this season, he's actually been a valuable part of the rotation. That's a big deal.
Yeah, so sometimes, you know, you draft a player and you anticipate them to come out of the gate being a superstar, and sometimes it just takes people a little bit longer. And I think we also forget that, like, a third or fourth starter is an incredibly valuable piece of the team. Like, every team needs those players. And if you had a player like that who can put up a 3.18 ERA, that's incredibly valuable, even if that's not a superstar performance. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Braves should be very, very happy with Wright's performance thus far this year. And it seems like fans are pretty appreciative of the job he's done.
Yeah, I think especially after what we had seen from Wright for the past few seasons, no one's really complaining about him being a perfectly serviceable mid-rotation starter.
Right. But then, you know, moving to Friday night, this is the marquee matchup. This is why I want to talk about this one last, because we have Max Fried with a 2.50 ERA, 167 strikeouts against Jacob DeGrom, who spent more than half the season on the injured list, but is already up to 91 strikeouts of his own. You know, this is one of the better pitching matches you'll see all season, and it's coming in such an important game. What has Fried done this year in your eyes that has just made him so special?
Yeah, we're just going to edit that out. This year, he's brought back the changeup, and it's actually been a really valuable pitch for him. And so that's just added one more thing that he can do. And it's kind of interesting because he's a guy with really good stuff. I mean, his fastball is not great. It's got decent velocity, but the spin rate is really bad, so it's pretty hittable. But his secondaries are fantastic. Despite the fact that he has this elite curveball, elite slider, solid changeup, he doesn't strike out as many guys as you would think because he's really started pitching to contact more recently in his career. But he's still found a way to be, you know, an elitely effective pitcher with that lower strikeout rate. I mean, he's not striking out nine batters per nine innings anymore like he used to. But he's been better pitcher for it. And so that's what you saw last postseason. And he's got that big game pitcher mentality as well that you know, the reputation that you hear from Morton. Fried's got the same thing. I mean, you saw him close out the World Series in game six last year after getting his ankle stepped on in the first inning. I mean, yep. this is a stud. This is an alpha mentality pitcher. Like, he's going to be there in a big game.
Ron Darling, commentator for the Mets, is often fond of saying that there's a period of time in a pitcher's career where his talent matches his IQ, where, yep, you know, the stuff is good, but they know how to pitch and they know how to work. And that seems like where Fried is to me. Like, when I look at him now, it seems like he is harnessing all the physical skills he has, but he's doing it in such a smarter way than he was a season or two ago.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a good way to look at pitching, because obviously, you know, the athleticism and the stuff is generally going to go downhill as your career progresses. But also, as we see time and time again, pitching, of all of the things in baseball it takes to learn, pitching is probably the hardest.
Yep.
And so that's the thing that you really do need to develop the IQ over time.
Yeah. So, you know, as a Mets fan looking at this series, you know, obviously the first game seems like the one that is going to be the most exciting because of the matchup, but it's also the one that I feel the least confident about from a Mets offensive standpoint. Do you feel the same way about the Braves? Is Friday night the game that you're concerned about because of DeGrom being on the mound?
I mean, just from the sense that like DeGrom is an alien. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, I think the Braves and the Mets, as similar as they've been this season, the biggest difference has been how they get their offensive production. And that's what makes it so hard to say with the Braves, is that the Braves hit a ton of home runs and that's where they get a lot of their offensive production, whereas the Mets are a little bit more small ball oriented. Mm-hmm. And so those runs can come in bunches when they do. And so, because it only takes, you know, a walk and a homer and there's two runs right there. And that's a lot more likely to happen for the Braves than it is for the Mets. And so it's sort of like, yes, obviously DeGrom is the best pitcher. And so it's the game that I'm most concerned about. And the Braves have had some success against Scherzer, especially in his Nationals
right
era. But at the same time, you know, with that style of offense, it can happen any night.
Sure. Who do you think are the players that will be the ones to watch this weekend in terms of impact? Like who are the couple, two or three Braves that you feel like if those folks have a good series, things will be good for the Braves?
Well, Austin Riley comes to mind. I mean, he's been really good this season, but he hasn't been quite as good in the last few months. I mean, he's still been good, but not like insanely elite level. Like he was tracking with like Paul Goldschmidt, who's the MVP favorite with WRC plus at one point, and he's not been quite that good recently. So I think him having a big series could really be a big windfall for the Braves.
Is there anybody else that comes to mind? Maybe is there someone in the bullpen? That's what I want to ask, I guess. You know, is there a bullpen, a relief pitcher that you feel like their performance will be determinative this weekend?
Well, I mean, Kenley Jansen comes to mind, obviously, because he had struggled a little bit in the last month to 6 weeks. And that was sort of a 2 week blip that he seems to have moved past at this point. But that still is a little bit in the back of my mind. And, you know, we know with the way that Brian Snicker manages, he's going to be the closer regardless. And so if he were to have a bad series, I think that would be a really big deal, obviously. But the Braves also have one of the best bullpens in baseball. And it's so deep that, you know, there's not really one guy that's just going to need to carry the load because they have so many guys who can be really, really good. But given that Kenley Jansen is the most likely to be put in those high leverage spots in the ninth inning and that he's had those blips this season, he would be the one that I would be more concerned about than, I think, in a positive sense, being a game changer.
Sure. I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, he's you really can't go wrong with I don't want to say anyone in that bullpen. That maybe is overstating it a little bit, but the Braves bullpen has been so impressive this year that I think, I mean, to me, when I look at the two teams, that is easily the place where I feel the Braves have one up on the Mets. You know, obviously the Braves do hit more home runs than the Mets, but the Mets as of late have been a relatively home run friendly team. You know, Pete Alonso is always a home run threat. Eduardo Escobar has hit 8 home runs this month and has really turned on the offense for the Mets. I would say against the two righties this weekend, I'm looking for a big series out of Daniel Vogelbach. He came to the team, was very hot when he started, and then had a bit of a hamstring injury that he wasn't swinging the bat very well, and he's already a liability on the base pads, and he was really, you know, almost unusable. If he was walking a lot still. His walk rate never slipped him when he was hurt, but he would have to be pinch run for quite a bit because he just could not run the bases. And so now that he's back at full strength against a couple of hard throwing righties, I think Vogelbach could be a difference maker in the two games in the against righties. And then for me, a big key player right now is Drew Smith for the Mets. He's in their bullpen. He was on the IL for a fair part of the summer and came back, and his first game out, he was brought in to a bases loaded situation, and it did not go very well for him. But since then, he has looked like a really elite relief pitcher. And last night came in the 10th inning with a man on second base and stranded him, which, as we all know, is very, very tough to do with the new extra innings rules. And so if Smith can be that piece out of the bullpen the Mets have missed this whole summer, that would be a very, very big thing for the weekend.
Yeah, I will say one thing that scares me about the Mets in a short series like this is that obviously DeGrom and Scherzer have the potential of going, you know, 7-8 innings any night. Mm-hmm. And while the Braves have by far the edge in bullpen depth, the Mets do have a few really good guys up there. And obviously we know what kind of tear Edwin Diaz has been on this season.
Yes.
And so if you can, like, if DeGrom goes 7 innings, that's really scary because the Braves hit bullpens well, but if,
but no
if
one hits Diaz well.
If he's their top guys, then you know that there's not. It's going to be a hard day for the Braves.
Yeah, and you know, Buck Showalter has been trying to use Edwin Diaz in some six out situations late in the season. I think to prepare for playoff games when that may be the plan, right? DeGrom or Scherzer goes seven, and then Diaz comes in for two if it's a tight game. So yeah, it's gonna be a good series. I mean, I think both of us are obviously rooting for our teams to win here. We're not gonna be. But how do you feel about the series? Do you think it's going to be a tight series? Do you think, just give me your general thoughts on what you're thinking for the weekend.
I mean, it's baseball, so anything could happen. But these teams are so evenly matched. I think that if Strider was healthy and pitching, I would feel a lot more confident. But given that the Braves, I mean, obviously the Braves need to win the series to have any chance at the division. Realistically, it would be nice to sweep, because if they don't sweep, then they need help from the Mets in the final series. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if Strider was there, I would feel a lot better about it. Without Strider there, I think you still have home field advantage, and the teams are pretty well matched. So given that it's home field, I would probably, you know, it's an okay feeling, but it makes me nervous. And obviously baseball is a game of high variance. So
yes,
anything
it is.
Can happen with two good teams.
Yeah. I mean, and it's kind of crazy that we're still here. Like, you know, when this race started tightening at the end of July, when it was really starting to get tight, I thought, okay, one of these teams is going to hit a losing streak for the first time this season. Like, this team has, neither team has lost, I think it's four games in a row since May, is it? Something like that. Like, it's been they've just been remarkably good at not hitting a skid. And so I expected one of the teams to hit a skid, and it would be clear by the time of the season that someone was going to be taking the division and the other team was going to be the number one wild card team. But they just keep, both teams just keep winning. I mean, it feels like the Braves haven't lost in 2 months. I know that's not true.
Yeah, and it's the same way the other, it's the same from my perspective. It's like, you know, it's been so stressful for both fan bases because it got close, and then both teams have just done almost the same thing with like minor movements up and down, but it's been just right there neck and neck for the last month, and it's been stressful.
Yeah, and it's crazy because, you know, the Mets got swept by the Cubs, who are a bad team, and I thought, oh, well, this is the Braves are gonna surge now, but the Braves were losing at the same time. Like, it's amazing how in sync they have been with their wins and losses. So
and not good for my blood pressure.
No, I have some years on you, and let me tell you, it is not good for anything like that.
Hey, it's Shigo for Calvin Klein. In my Calvins. That's all. Calvins or nothing. Find your sexy.
Kara Swisher here. You may know me as the person who made Mark Zuckerberg sweat, pushed Kim Kardashian to talk dollars, or got Secretary Mayor Pete Buttigieg to eat a juicy strawberry live on stage. Okay, that one was awkward. But that's what I like to do, make powerful people comfortable with being uncomfortable. Now I'll be doing that on my new show from New York Magazine, On with Kara Swisher. We'll bring you news and the newsmakers I'm paying attention to, and we'll do it twice a week on Mondays and Thursdays. Go check it out, On with Kara Swisher, wherever you get your podcasts.
So I have a question for you.
Sure, go ahead. Yeah, man.
If you had to guess the difference between the two teams in total F4 over the season, what would you guess the difference is? And who would you guess is the leader?
I'm going to guess it's the Braves, because I would say that the Mets have been remarkably consistent all season, but the Braves have had such periods of high that I would think that though, I'm going to say it's like, it's going to be close, I think. I'm going to say the Braves are up by three F4.
The Mets lead by 0.1 F4.
Wow.
And it's kind of funny the way it worked out as well, because if you looked at the rosters, you wouldn't guess this, but the Braves lead by 2.1 pitching F4, and the Mets lead by 2.2 position player F4.
Wow, that is actually very interesting. Yeah, wow. So let's talk about the playoffs for a minute. How important to you is the bye in the wild card round? Like, is that something that you think both teams should be going 100% from now to the end of the season because it's so important? Or do you think that both teams are significantly better than the other wild card teams, and therefore if they wind up as the wild card team, it's not the end of the world?
Well, you know, like I was saying earlier, my philosophy about baseball is that it's a game of five variants, which I think is very true. And so I think that by, you know, anytime you can not play a short series with your elimination on the line, I think that's a pretty big deal. And it sort of works out how, you know, both teams can sort of go almost all out by, you know, lining up their starters for this series. And it doesn't have to be for the last series of the season, because there's a good chance that this series right here is the determining factor. And so that's sort of a blessing in disguise, in the sense that, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be you burning your best three starters on the last 3 days of the season.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for the Mets, I know before they had changed the configuration of the starting pitchers to maximize against the Braves, I think Bassett was scheduled to go the last day of the season. Now it would be DeGrom. But obviously, unless they really needed DeGrom, they're not going to throw him the last game of the season.
Right.
You know, and so both teams are lined up in a way where even if they lose the division, even if they're wind up, you know, if they're in the wild card series, their pitching staff should be well lined up for that series.
Yeah. I think that I would almost say that both teams would say that either they want a Braves sweep or a Mets win of this series, just for the clarity that that provides.
Yes. Yes. I think that's probably correct, even though it pains me to say that, you know, I know that these things happen, but I have not, as a fan, been in this tight of a playoff battle at this late in the season that has gone the Mets' way since 1999, when they had to play a game 163 against the Reds to make it in as a wild card team. You know, in 2007 and 2008, the Mets famously collapsed at the end of the season, and those were heartbreaking for their own reasons. But this is a much better team than either of those teams. This is more than likely a 100-win team, and they're in the playoffs no matter what. Now, personally, I think that the Padres, who are currently in the spot that would line up against the Braves or the Mets in the wild card division, the wild card series, rather, I think the Padres are probably the most beatable team on the National League side in the playoffs. Do you agree with that?
Well, I mean, obviously, like, the Phillies, who might not even make the playoffs at this rate.
Right.
Because of the Cubs, who you were talking about, you
know, right,
the Mets having struggles with earlier. But yeah, I mean, the Padres don't scare me that much. But again, it's a short series and it's baseball.
Yeah, I mean, and they have Juan Soto, right? Like, so, you know, if a player like that is a big series, all bets are off, essentially.
Yeah. But I will say, like, I think part of what also has made this race so stressful is not just how tight it's been for how long, but both teams deserve to have a division win at the end of the season based on how good they've been.
Yes. And that's the unfortunate part of all of this.
And the new playoff format gives extra stakes to it as well. And so it's just this perfect storm of a completely new playoff format that, you know, has added benefit for winning your division, especially when you're the second best team, you know, top, one of the top two teams.
Right.
And both teams definitely deserve to win that division.
How do you feel about this new format?
It only has to be one.
As this format is being rolled out this year, how do you feel about this format?
Well, I was not a fan of expanding the playoffs, but I was glad that it was not like, you know, your 14-team playoffs that got tossed around. I think that not reseeding after the first round is silly, but it is also in line with MLB consistently making silly decisions. Like,
agreed.
You know, if Spencer Strider were to win Rookie of the Year, the Braves would not get any draft pick compensation for that under the new rule, because he was only on one of the three top 100 prospect lists at the beginning of the season, to give you an idea of another silly rule. So, you know, it's very on brand for MLB to make a, you know, rule that's not very well thought out. And hopefully the, you know, they can get together with MLBPA and maybe just renegotiate to reseed after the first round. And that's not a big deal. Am I optimistic that's going to happen? Not really, because it's MLB, but
right.
I think it would be a smart decision. So, not a huge fan in the sense that it's expanded playoffs, and also in the sense that it's not very well thought out expanded playoffs.
Yeah, I generally agree with that. I do like the idea of the top two records getting a bye. I think that it incentivizes teams to really go for it at the end of the season. I think that your mileage may vary on how important that is, but I do think it's nice to reward those teams that are doing so well. And it's making, like, for instance, if this was the old format, it would be a very different feeling to be going into a one game playoff for the wild card versus going into a series for the wild card.
Spot. Yeah, that is true. And that's definitely the silver lining, is the elimination of the one game wild card game.
Yeah. But I will say, I will forever mourn the loss of the 163rd game.
Yep.
I think that's just such an exciting bit of baseball that is a unique thing in baseball also. And for some reason, it seems like Rob Manfred wants to pull anything that is uniquely baseball out of the game. And, you know, so I'm a little bit bummed out at the loss of that. And
we could be talking about that right now as well. If it was under the old format, we could be talking about a game 163.
Exactly. And that's just, it's just so exciting. It's actually, I'll never forget. So I guess it was 2007. Yeah, it was the Rockies and maybe the Cardinals, I think, in game 163. And it was a crazy, it was one of my favorite games I was watching with no rooting interest, just to watch the baseball. You know, it was such an exciting, fun series. Game rather. But yeah, the new format, I think I'll have stronger opinions on it after the season to see how it works in practice as opposed to just working in theory, because like you, I do not like the idea of an expanded playoff. I actually think that the original play, like the 1997, was it the first year of the wild card? That to me is like the platonic ideal of baseball, which is there you have the three division winners and you have the wild card team. And to me, that is plenty of teams in the playoffs. But you know, I understand that there are fan bases in Seattle and Cleveland and Tampa and San Diego and Philadelphia that are really fired up right now. And that may not be the case if this wasn't the old format. So I get why it's good for the game overall, even if I think it's worse for the playoffs themselves.
Yeah. And I will say, like, there's another issue of, you know, should division winners get precedence over wildcard teams with a better record? And it's like, that's sort of your entertainment value versus fairness,
right, exactly.
Argument there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, but I think that regardless, I mean, I truly think that whichever team is the wild card, they will probably be facing the Dodgers in the division series. I think the Mets and the Braves both line up nicely against the other wild card teams. And so there is a chance that the Mets and Braves could be meeting again in the NLCS, which would be, I don't know how my blood pressure would do for that. You know, I don't know. The Braves have always scared me as a team, just because I think, and this is something I just wanted to pick your brain about. It seems like there's this never ending carousel of young players coming up for the Braves. But I was told by a friend that this year they think that the pantry's kind of empty now going forward, at least for a couple of years. Do you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, well, maybe. Okay. I mean, the thing is that coming into this season, the pipeline, like, our farm system was not ranked very well. And then you had Spencer Strider and Michael Harris are the runaway rookie of the year favorites this year. And so, you know, the Braves, they haven't had the farm system that's going to get good rankings since Alex Anthopoulos has got here in terms of what he's brought into the system.
Sure.
When we were ranked high with him still as GM, that was a lot based on prospects that he didn't bring in. But what he has done is he's identified guys, and just these specific guys have worked out. Michael Harris, Spencer Strider, and now you see Justin Henry Molloy, who just got promoted to AAA, and he's going to the Arizona Fall League. You know, he could be that next guy. And so, you know, it doesn't have the volume that would make it look like, yeah, there's going to be this flood of young talent, but there is a guy there who could be a difference maker next year. And we said the same about Michael Harris and Spencer Strider last season. And they move these guys fast, and they come up and they work out. And, you know, Vaughn Grissom could also, you know, he came up, was really hot, and then he struggled more recently. So he could get back up to playing really well again next year. And then you've got Vaughn Grissom and Justin Henry Molloy, and you've got two really good young players again. So, you know, while we don't have the volume of prospects, this Anthopoulos regime has just identified guys that have worked out. And so it's sort of hard to say when you're looking at the farm system.
Do you think that Anthopoulos so far has done? I mean, look, the team won the World Series under him, right? So you can't be too harsh on the guy. But how do you feel he's done as GM so far?
Oh, it's been spectacular. And I mean, you know, one of the rumored favorites for the position when he was hired was Dayton Moore, and he just got fired from Kansas City. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Anthopoulos has been masterful. You know, he came in with a lot of talent in the farm system, which obviously helped a lot. But at the same time, he could have gone AJ Preller and, you know, gone trade crazy. And instead, he identified the guys who were going to work out, and he's kept them. You know, Ronald Acuna, Austin Riley, both came up under him. Austin Riley, he was bad for a while. He came up, was really hot, and then he struggled for the rest of the season. And then for the next season, he struggled. And there were a lot of people in Braves country that were really concerned that he was coming in to last season as the starter. And now he just got a massive extension and is an MVP caliber player. And right. So at the same time, he traded Christian Pache, Shea Langeliers, to the Athletics for Matt Olson. And Pache has still not been able to hit at the major league level. And Langeliers has also struggled to hit at the major league level. And so he's done a really good job of identifying which prospects he wants to keep and at being patient with them. And now you have a young core that, you know, we're struggling to find spots for good players, and there's still talent in the farm system. And so, yeah, I think he's done a masterful job.
And then you mentioned before, we were talking about Kenley Jansen, you said that because of who the manager is, you know he's going to be closing games. So that leads me to believe that maybe there is some criticism on your end about Brian Snitker and how he manages the team. Or are you just saying he's a very traditional manager and therefore, you know, he has his closer and that's just the way it goes?
Snitker's tactics drive me crazy in the regular season, but I think that however the organization does the tactics in the postseason, they get the tactics right, like 95% of the time in the postseason. And Snitker is the kind of guy that everyone loves. He's a great story. He's a great leader. And so I'll deal with hating the tactics that he uses in the regular season for that factor and for him getting it right in the postseason. If he continued to get it wrong in the postseason, it would be a much bigger issue. And actually, I have a friend in the Dodgers analytics department who I've sort of talked to about that issue of a lot of these more old school managers and very analytics heavy front offices. Mm-hmm. And he was sort of, and I asked him about that, you know, with their situation. And he was sort of like, yeah, I think a lot of us really prioritize the human element with the manager. And then we get across what analytical concepts we can, but when he's in there with the guys every day, you know, that does matter.
Yes.
Both as far as how they're feeling and how they're performing, but also as far as, you know, contract negotiations in the future and retaining those players. And so, you know, that factor does matter a lot. And so given that Snitker gets the tactics right in the postseason, you know, and is a great guy, I'll deal with the tactical disputes that I have with him on every regular season game.
I also think, like, if you ask the majority of fans, specifically the majority of fans who consider themselves analytically minded, do you like how your manager manages games? Most fans would say, no, of course not. Right? You know?
Yeah, unless you're the Rays. Yeah,
unless you're the Rays. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, from the Mets' perspective, you know, we came off of a couple of seasons of a rookie manager. One of his first ever season was a COVID season. We're talking about Luis Rojas here. And, yep. You know, that's an incredibly hard job to get into, you know, to walk into, especially because Carlos Beltran was hired and then fired. It was just, it was a mess that led to Rojas being there. But, you know, he wasn't exactly successful in that role. And then before him, we had Terry Collins, who's about as old school gets. You know, he's the guy who famously refused to believe that Justin Turner had a reverse platoon split and kept starting him against lefties, even though all evidence pointed to the fact that that shouldn't be done. So with Buck Showalter, the Mets finally have a manager that is more analytically minded, but is also praised as a player's manager. And, you know, again, I think some of his bullpen management is absurd, but he's a major league manager. We're going to think that, right? That's just, that's the way that these things go, unfortunately.
Yeah, certainly.
So before we get to our music picks, just last thought here. What is your... How can I put this? Who is the guy that at the end of the Braves playoff run, however long it is, who is the player that you're going to look back and say, they couldn't have got there without this guy. Who is their MVP for this season?
I think it's hard to say it's anyone other than Michael Harris, because that outfield was basically a disaster when he came up. I mean, we could not play outfield defense, and he's come up and been arguably the best defensive center fielder in the league, and also has had like a 140 WRC plus as a rookie, and as a lefty rookie as well for a Braves team that didn't have great lefty bats outside of Matt Olson. And that's pretty much anything that you can ask for from a player. So, I mean, just what he did for the outfield defensive situation, as well as just his incredible offensive production, it's hard to say that it was anyone else. And the Braves started winning as soon as he came up, and that's pretty much been the turning point of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think for the Mets, it's hard to say it's not Pete Alonso. Just, you know, Alonso has 40 home runs now. You know, he's set the single-season RBI record for the Mets earlier this week, and he's just been remarkably consistent and has really improved his defensive game at first base over the last couple of seasons, too. He's turned into an above-average first baseman, which was not the scouting report on him when he was coming up through the minor league system. He was considered a bat-first player, and he still certainly is bat-first, but his glove has become, you know, nothing to sneeze at either. But I would give an outside edge to Edwin Diaz, just because you don't see closer performances this dominant very often. And, you know, I know there is some a bone of contention with the Braves as to sort of who has the rights to the Narco song. But from where I'm sitting, that is Diaz's thing. And the Mets have really leaned into that this year and have made it an essential part of going to a game at Citi Field, is seeing the Narco entrance. And I just think that fans are so into watching Diaz pitch that he's the emotional favorite for MVP this season, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, that's understandable. I remember when Craig Kimbrel was dominant when I was a lot younger, and, you know, me and my mom used to go to some games, and we would just love watching him pitch. So I totally get that experience. And as far as Narcos goes, you know, I think that can totally be his signature thing, as long as he doesn't claim exclusivity. So
okay. To be fair, he never claimed exclusivity. It was the Blaster Jacks who do the song. They claimed it was his song. He did not say anything about it. He just comes in and throws sliders that melt your brain.
I think the exclusivity thing is where the Discord really went off the rails there.
Yeah. Well, but you know, you're gonna find this shocking, but Mets fans and Braves fans are both very passionate about their team, and on Twitter they can get a little salty.
Oh, of course.
You know, and in the comments section of our respective sites, I'm sure as well, there has been some there's been some disagreements, but that's totally fine. So speaking of,
we have a saying over in Braves Twitter where, you know, there's never anything that's too petty. There's never anything that we won't find, and we always have time for it.
I think you've just summed up baseball Twitter in general. But anyway, so speaking of Narco, we're gonna get to some music picks. I was telling Daniel before the show, we always pick some music we're listening to and recommend it to our listeners. So what is your music pick for this week?
Yeah, so I play alto saxophone, and I also enjoy listening to jazz. And so I have enjoyed both playing and listening to Misty, which is an old jazz classic, but I'm particularly fond of Dexter Gordon's style, so I'll recommend Misty, played by Dexter Gordon.
I am a fellow jazz fan. You can't see it, but right over here, I have a painting of the cover of A Love Supreme by John Coltrane on my wall. So it's my favorite record of all time. Do you have a particular version of Misty? Like, was that a live staple for Dexter Gordon? Is there a year we should be seeking at, or just the?
No, I'm just a big fan of his style. If you want a specific performance, if you look on YouTube, he played a Night in Tunisia in Holland, and that is one of the most incredible bebop jazz performances I've ever seen. So that's a good one.
I'll add both those to this list.
And I will mention, I was born in Greensboro, North Carolina, and John Coltrane is from High Point, North Carolina, which is about 20 minutes away. So I'm very familiar with him, and I'm close to him historically a bit.
Yeah, I grew up about 5 minutes from the studio where that was recorded, as well as like many other amazing jazz records are recorded. And whenever I drive past, I get a little, a little bit of just the vibes off of that place, which is, you know, just incredible. That's very cool, though. I did not know you were a musician. I grew up playing bass in a high school jazz band, and continue to play bass in some bands now. All right, I am going to recommend something that's very different than that, but that's what I love about this show. I love that we get different music recommendations. There is a Canadian singer-songwriter named Daniel Romano, and his band is called Daniel Romano's Outfit. They just released a record this month called La Luna, and it is two tracks. Each track is an entire LP side, and it's just these suites of songs that almost evoke, I wouldn't quite call it a concept album, or like, I don't think that, I mean, I haven't studied the lyrics too thematically yet, but it almost feels like a rock opera type thing where the songs, they all go into each other, and there seems to be like motifs and thematic elements that go through both sides of the record. And it's just a really interesting album. And Romano has done so many weird records over the last couple of years. When the pandemic started, he did a Bob Dylan cover record, but he did it in a very like specific style. And he's done some sort of like free jazz stuff. He's done some country stuff. He's done some punk stuff. So this is sort of him in his most songwritery kind of orchestral pop mindset. It's just a really interesting record. And I put it on a couple days while I was cooking, and it made the cooking experience very pleasant. So make some soup, put on La Luna by Daniel Romano's Outfit, and you can't go wrong. Well, Daniel, thank you so much for being on the show this week. Where can folks find you online if they want to get in touch with you?
Yeah, so I am at Braves Daniel on Twitter, the infamous Twitterverse. And obviously, you're welcome to interact with us in the comments section over at Battery Power.
Yeah. This is my message to both Braves fans and Mets fans. Be nice to us, please. We are all the folks that are doing podcasts, that are writing about these teams. We are trying our best. And there have been some not so pleasant Twitter interactions with some people going towards some Amazing Avenue writers as of late. And I'm not saying I don't think those are Braves fans, actually, just fans in general. But, you know, just be nice to folks out there, guys. Twitter is a healthy.
We can unite around making fun of the Phillies as well.
Absolutely. I'm game for that. Yeah. Anytime, you know, it's that, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So when the Phillies are playing, you know, we can all have a nice good laugh about them. Real quick. Do the Phillies make the playoffs? Yes or no?
No.
You don't think so?
It's level right now.
It is level right now.
I'll take the Brewers.
All right. Yeah. I don't know. I have a feeling the Phillies are going to pull it off. I do. But will they make the second round?
What in the last 5 years has made you feel that?
I mean, nothing really. I guess just the Brewers have been so uninspiring on their own since the trade deadline. That
I mean, there's uninspiring and then there's god-awful. So, you know, take your pick.
Fair enough. I was really hoping that the Phillies were going to help the Mets out against the Braves. Just thinking that the Phillies had something to play for. They really had this, you know, they have to fight to get into the postseason, and they just rolled over.
Yeah, well, it's been like that for them in late season in the past few years. I mean, they were right there for the division in 2018 until we took it out from under their feet.
That is true. One of these years, the Braves will be bad, and you will know what it feels like, but that's not happening this year and probably not next year either. So thank you so much, Daniel. Please go to AmazingAvenue.com and is it BatteryPower.com? I don't even know the new – I know it used to be TalkingChop.com. Is it now BatteryPower.com?
It is indeed BatteryPower, yep.
Go to both sites. Please, again, be polite in the comments, but have some fun. You know, baseball's fun. Let's have fun with this weekend series. You can also go and find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever podcasts are found. You can find Amazing Avenue on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Brian Needs a Nap. As Daniel said, he is on Twitter at Braves Daniel, right?
Yep.
I couldn't remember if it was Daniel Braves or Braves Daniel.
Nope, it was Braves Daniel. You got okay. It. Yep.
And I am on Twitter at Brian Needs a Nap. And remember, until next time, and especially this weekend, don't tell Daniel I'm saying this. Let's go Mets. Thank you.